This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
Back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk, 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. We're live here inside the MDN studios, and the crew, the band, is back together. I have calmed my brother, Brian Cook, down. Only took a bottle of whiskey.
I walk in here and I'm like, it's not that bad.
Sam. You did say that.
We don't need this.
They thought I needed the whiskey coming off of last week's game.
No. Wait. Craig Ross.
It was
Ross.
A preemptive strike.
Craig Ross needs the whiskey.
I was quoting Lloyd Bridges walking in saying, I guess I picked the wrong week to quit sniffing glue. And so you're going to have to talk me off the ledge after this week.
He came into our podcast and he was like, make me feel better.
Oh, that's right. Sunday. I sat there and they couldn't make me feel any better.
Hey, look, they left a lot offensively on the field Saturday for sure. And I mean, you could look at it a couple of ways. You could be like, oh my God, look at everything they left on the field. Or you could look at it and say, these things that, I mean, you could see how a lot of this is correctable. That doesn't mean they will.
Yeah.
But these look like fixable things. Many of the items we're going to talk about today. Joining us as always, Brian Cook from MGO Blog. Brian, good morning.
Morning.
Craig Ross.
Planet Lovetron.
What? just keep going.
All right,
don't get knocked off.
And Ed Fang from the Power Rank. Ed, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. How are you, Sam?
I'm great. I feel like we should start with you, Craig, and get your observations
of
the last
week, Sam,
game
of all weeks.
Yeah, let's start with Craig and play off of him.
Do you remember the scene in Dr. Strangelove? Where
I wasn't born.
Okay, well,
it's a movie, so they put it on tape. You can watch it.
Yeah, I mean, there's
movie.
A scene in Doctor Strangelove where you got a shot. Where Doctor Strangelove is talking to President or Premier Kissoff, and Kissoff has just informed them that there's a doomsday machine.
Right.
And Doctor Strangelove points out a doomsday machine is pointless if you don't tell anyone about it, right? In other words, it only has value if other people know that you have a doomsday machine. And Kissoff said, well, we were waiting for the fourth, you know, the May Day parade or something like that. So it's sort of the same here in that you shouldn't be running, I think, a spread to run offense, if your quarterback never reads. And
I
know that Al Borges said there was only one. I think he's wrong.
There's only one bluff run.
Oh, okay. I thought only, because I don't think there was one pull in the game and it was wrong.
Well, he ate a corner blitz, the one pull.
Right.
Okay, that happens.
It happens. But in other words, it didn't look to me like this offense had any reads in it at all. Or if it was, they were wrong, because there was at least a half dozen plays where it looks on tape.
All right, we'll start there. Seth put up a post about the way Army approached defense that was pretty good. So what they do is they shuffle their end down, and then they have a scrape. But the scraper is pretty aware of what's going on. So if the handoff is made, he's able to redirect and actually be useful on that run.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that Michigan never had an approach that tried to address that.
And so basically what you wind up is two guys on the outside, essentially.
Yeah, and I thought that, you know, even though, like, there's a shuffle end sometimes, like, you got to test that guy. So there was a Charbonnet run where Michigan actually blocked it to the safety, and they were going to get a nice chunk, and then the shuffle end was able to react quickly enough to get a tackle in at like 6 to 8 yards.
Yeah, because there's one that I posted a clip of that I had Al focus on specifically because it was very, very clear what you were talking about. It was like 5:29 in the third quarter where Shea, you know, he gives. And a lot of people are saying this is an obvious pull. And Al made the observation exactly what you're talking about. There was an exchange where, if the ends crash, but the linebacker is right there. So it gives you two guys on the outside. And he contends that Shea saw the exchange. And well, if you see two guys, now could he have possibly beat the linebacker outside? It's possible.
I mean, you got to test it.
Possible he could have done it, but was his read on that wrong? You see, the question is, was his read on that wrong?
So I think the question is bigger. The question is, if you have a spread offense and you have the other team has the ability to shut off your quarterback keep game, you failed. That's a bad approach because then, you know, I don't want to do this because Al, you're just talking about Al.
Do it.
They pulled the Al Borges because you got fourth and one, and to the field side you have Tariq Black and Nico freaking Collins, and nobody's within 10 yards of them. And there's no earthly person on the planet who is going to stop a bubble screen there or a smoke route for one freaking yard. So one of the big problems that we had under Borges is that they didn't punish teams that were so soft on the edge. Because if you're that soft on the edge, you remember the pass interference on Nico?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So that's an Army cornerback, and he's over the top of Nico Collins. Why is he over the top of Nico Collins? Because he started 10 yards deep. So what can you do now that you're not afraid of Nico Collins burning you for a touchdown? You can activate those safeties.
So a couple of things here. He said he saw one QB bluffing. What can you do? What are some of the things you can do to force the quarterback run? You could certainly run more bluff runs. And I looked at it. I only saw one as well when we saw, like, what, five in the first game?
You're talking about arc zone, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And okay. So in this game, to not see that as much, my speculation on the matter, and I haven't talked to anyone about this to know for sure, my speculation was, you know what? They are definitely kind of catering to maybe not adding to some of the issues that they were seeing with the pressure that was getting to Shea. That was my impression.
They totally turtled. This was like a total Lloyd Ball turtle. They ran 12 straight times in the second half. Like, this was like the second half of this game plan was obviously taken away from Gattis. And was obviously.
Like, I don't think that's.
I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, like, can say that. I know that Harbaugh is telling him that we're not going to get our quarterback sacked anymore, so we can't pass the ball very much.
How do you know that?
Because I watched the game. Because I went over the game. So, it was a full on Lloyd Ball turtle in the second half.
So here's what I'll say. I do believe that there was, and this is, again, speculation. I don't want to make it sound like I know because I don't. I'm speculating that coming off of the last game where Shea obviously got banged up and you're in this game and clearly some of the pressure was getting to him, that there is, hey, you know, we're gonna stay away from this you call it arc zone, right? You know, others call Ryan, it bluff run.
You gotta call it arc zone because that's arc a specific is, thing. Bluff is just like what are you doing on every other
play? Well, I mean, they even called it that on Monday Night Football. Deshaun Watson ran the same play. They called it the QB bluff run.
Okay, well, that's
so,
the NFL.
Whatever, NFL's, terminology. Terminology.
NFL doesn't know what's going on.
Terminology. Arc zone, since it's the MLB Ball Ground Table, all right?
Yeah.
I think they said, look, you know what? Quarterback is already, you know, flinching with the pressure. We aren't going to add to that. We aren't going to compound that with exposing him. Because, you know, when you run that, and this is one of my questions to Al, you know, arc zone versus, you know, regular zone read. Is the arc zone, are you predisposed to the quarterback pulling the ball? And he said, yes. He said, it's typically, you make that call 80% of the time you expect for the quarterback to pull it. That's his take.
I mean, first of all, arc zone connects more to split zone.
Right. So, and they weren't really. So, the problem is
agree with that.
you know, when you have this. So what did Rich Rodriguez do when this happened? Because this happened to him. Because a scrape exchange has been around for years.
It had happened. I mean, Rich Rod lost a national championship when he lost a pit. When Pitt started scraping and they didn't recognize it, but he figured it out after that.
Right. So this is this is a thing that's out there, right? And it's something that you need to have responses to, and Michigan did not have any.
Well, there was so what if I pull up the play, the one that they got stuffed on with Dylan at quarterback.
So that's a blitz specifically designed to combat arc zone, because you have this guy ripping off the corner because he knows the snap count. He goes right past Eubanks. He can't be blocked. He's running right at McCaffrey. You have to hand off. And then you have the shuffle end coming down and crushing Zach Charbonnet. That in my reckoning, that's an RPS minus 3. And the play before that was an RPS minus 2 because that was another
explain
play.
Explain RPS because a couple
rock,
people.
Paper, scissors. So okay. When you have a play call on defense that absolutely crushes an offensive play in the backfield and there's no way for them to escape it, that's an RPS minus 3. So that play call is dead. And the frustrating thing is that to the field side, you have two awesome wide receivers with nobody within 10 yards.
So we have this play up on the Michigan Insider YouTube page right now. It's third and 3. Is this the right one? Let me see. Is this the right one? Yeah, this is the one that he pointed out. So it's third and 3, and it's 3:08 left in the fourth quarter. And you're saying that he absolutely should have handed this off. Is that your contention?
No, the fourth down is he absolutely should have handed it.
Okay, this is one where Al was saying he should have pulled that. And if he pulls that play, he thinks he's going to be able to pick up the first down this play.
I mean, it was extremely frustrating because McCaffrey comes in for 3 plays. The fourth down play, he can't do anything about, but you know, he has a bad throw on his single throw. Mm-hmm. And also he probably picks the wrong guy because Nico Collins is wide open. And then he has a potential misread on third and 3. So I don't – like every quarterback made bad decisions in this game, and that's probably the most alarming part of it. So the issue with Patterson is not when he throws, it's when he doesn't. So that punt up to Collins is the first time in his Michigan career he's just been like, screw it, and Rex Grossman the ball. And he needs to do that instead of like running up in the pocket to take a 2-yard sack, right? Like he has time to get these balls off.
I wanted to ask you guys about this because I wasn't at the game, but Shea pulled the ball down many times, especially towards the end of the first half, beginning of the second half. How much can you attribute that to Army's coverage?
Nico Collins is never covered enough for you to pull the ball down.
I mean, I get that too, but the flip side is like if you throw to a covered Nico Collins and something bad happens, then we're like, well, shouldn't have thrown it to a covered guy. Right.
No. So the problem with Nico Collins is I'm going through his clips from last year, and he does not have one genuine jump ball situation, except a couple of fades against
Ohio State. Yeah, the Ohio State touchdown.
He threw a jump ball deal to him in game one.
That wasn't a jump ball. That was a post pattern that was behind him that he had to jump for. That's not like this guy's well. No. Just because you like so a jump ball situation is a.
I think he was trying to make it a jump ball there. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Well, if he's wide open on a post, that's not the same thing. Like. That's open. I need to throw this guy a touchdown. Like, even if he's covered, just throw it to him and see what happens. Because the alternative is that was a terribly thrown ball. Michigan still got a PI out of it.
Right.
So Nico Collins got out of this game with five targets.
Yeah, he said 7 on the season, and that's like 5th on Michigan right now.
So they don't count the ones where you get calls, and he got calls on a couple.
Sure.
Well, I mean, so you're... it sounds like to me you're talking about predetermining I'm going to Nico.
No, but like his alternatives are bad. So when it's like, all right, I didn't get my first read, I'm going to run around in the pocket and take a 2-yard sack. That sucks. Especially because a lot of the times he's got a clean pocket and he can actually sit in there.
So
he left the pocket 4 or 5 times in this game.
He did.
Where he just absolutely had no cause to.
Do you feel like that's on Shea? Like, does he have to get to a second read? Does he just need to be faster getting through his reads?
The first fumble's on Shea too, because that's
Let's slow down. The pressure when you go back to game one and look at all the hits he took, and you add to it the pressure that he was feeling in this game. I don't think there's any question that he was sped up. There were times in this game where there was pressure. There was one that we put up where he called it seeing ghosts. If you look at the YouTube page, where I mean, there's a good pocket and he flinches and runs upfield. That's what when the quarterback is seeing pressure like he's seen it, that can happen. That's why it's a good time for the bye week. At the same time, you know, there were some plays that were there that you attack down the football field that were just plain missed. There were some drops in the game as well. So even if we stipulate that there could have been more, obviously could have been more there, even within the framework of what they ran. I mean, you had the wheel route that should have been a touchdown. You had that post in overtime that should have been a touchdown. You had Nick Eubanks in the flat that was high. That could have been a big play because he only had one guy to beat who was coming at him full speed, and so you were going to be able to probably beat him. Then you had a couple of drops in there. You had the drop after the missed post in overtime. You had the out that was dropped.
That's Tariq.
That was a tough
catch.
That's
a tough, yeah.
I mean, to me, that's more of a miss by the quarterback then.
I mean, it's in your hand. Okay. But
it's borderline, for sure.
It's borderline.
Your point is, you're a full extension. People drop those balls, and that throw didn't need to be there.
My point is, look at, you know, I just named five plays where even with the limitations that maybe we're talking about with the plays that were left too soon, there were still a bunch of plays that they left.
Well, you know, here's the thing. You don't even have to go that far. I mean, Michigan fumbled on three of its first four possessions. I mean, and they were moving the ball sort of awkwardly, but they were moving the ball on those possessions.
Subtle level, Ronnie Bell didn't catch three punts. That was, a net 35 yards?
We gave up, 100 yards of field position on punts. And by letting the ball drop. Now, some of that I still think is structural.
I guess I come out of this, and we got to get to a break. He's frantically saying, get to a break.
Get these guys off the air.
I can see how with the bye week and you get some valuable pieces back from a protection standpoint, you get Shea healthier. I can see how this can get better. Doesn't mean it absolutely will, but I don't think it's a doomsday scenario like you think it is, or like you feel like it is right now.
Well, my analogy is slightly different. In other words, if you're running a spread offense, your quarterback has got to make the reads.
All right, let's get to
some
reads.
We'll
pick that up on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket. And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTK.com. So, you know, getting back to our discussion of the Army game and how ominous the signs are, if you believe they're ominous coming out of that game, about when it comes to, the rest of the season, just how ominous was that game, or were the signs from that game? To me, it boils down to, you know, whether or not you believe what you saw in that game is what Shea Patterson is, is what this offense is. And to your point, Craig, you said, well, hey, if the quarterback pull isn't going to be a part of the game, then don't run the offense. But my response was, well, did you see quarterback pull in against Middle Tennessee State?
Oh, yeah, they did.
So, and, you know, it's in there.
Well, it's part of the offense, but I don't know what's going on in the Army game, because I think there are plenty of pulls, half dozen, that are there, or at least should be tried. And you know, on these scrapes, it's not like new. They've been going on for 15 years in college football, so it isn't like they don't know about defenses doing it. And as Brian points out, you need to be able to respond to those. And second, I still see the linebacker in the end stuck inside when the end is crashing and the quarterback handing the ball off. And it seems somewhat insane to me to give your freshman running back 33 carries beyond that.
Well, I mean, that obviously wasn't ideal, but they got to the point where the running back rotation is condensed considerably when one of the pieces to that puzzle is directly tied to two turnovers. So then once you go from that, your third string guy, he comes in and he fumbles. So what are you going to do? Well, what are you going to do at that point?
I mean, there's no question that we've had, you know, 9 formal fumbles in 2 games and 5 lost. What did we lose last year? 3. Now you're going to regress to the middle. There's no doubt about that.
All right, but
still.
The running back rotation is beside the point. The problem is that Shea Patterson did not play like a Big Ten championship-level quarterback or anywhere near one. And the issue that really kind of stands out is the fact that his pocket presence has not improved. And I know he took a couple of hits early in that game, but they didn't get much other pressure the whole game, and he's still bugging out. And
that's particularly worrisome, right? I mean, there's a lot of research in the NFL that suggests that quarterbacks own more of sacks than we think. You know, we kind of put a lot of it on the offensive line, and this goes back to last season. You know, when this offensive line had 4 all-conference guys, but they were pretty much, you know, in my numbers, like FBS average in terms of sack rate allowed. And I'm starting to think more of that's on Patterson. I mean, some of them were clearly on Patterson last year, but you have to wonder about the line given where they were coming from the year before. I mean, I think that's worrisome. I mean, how do you make a guy think faster?
Well, I guess for me, if it stays like we saw at times in the Army game, when he has John Runyon back, when he has True Wilson back, then my level of concern will rise significantly. But
how good is Army too, right? Like, did they just play their best game?
I mean, they did some clever things. Like when he pulled into the when he did that pull into the corner blitz. Yeah. I don't know how you would recognize that as a corner blitz.
Well, you would notice that there's a cornerback from Army within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage.
You're lined up on the hash. And sure, you glance at the corner, but they're in a one high safety look. And teams don't. I mean, who corner blitzes without, you know, some obvious help over the top? A help defender outside the hash. So you look at that and you don't see that. You say, oh, that guy's not gonna come in this situation. But they had come down. Yeah, they had come down with like probably a nickel guy at linebacker depth, and at the snap of the ball, he bugs out over the receiver.
Yeah, and that's fine. But
I mean, my point is sometimes the defense makes the call and they're like, oh, hell, that's pretty. I got to tip my cap to you.
Yes. And sometimes the offense does it, except not one time in this game. And when you go through a whole game and you can't think of like, oh, that was a really great call.
I thought that wheel route was a really great call.
Okay, the wheel route, fine.
You said that one time. Right.
Do you think that one time is good enough?
You just said that one time, and I gave you an example.
So, Sam, you're talking about the second fumble, right, when the cornerback?
No, I'm talking about it.
It was in the 2-minute drill when the one pull that Shea had, and he lost yards.
And it got eaten up. But clearly, they were looking to, you know, get closer for a field goal, and he wound up taking a big loss.
You know, when they're eating Michigan's lunch and forcing a 50-yard field goal, when they're eating Michigan's lunch, and there's a 4th and 2 that Michigan has no chance on. Like, where are the corresponding other plays where it's just like, oh, yeah, that was structurally a win?
I hear what you're saying. But the 4th and 2 call, I mean, yeah, that the you talking about, was that the bunch one where they just blew it up in the backfield?
Yeah. No, that was the other 4th and 2 call, which was worse. So the Michigan didn't get any tactical wins in this game. And they made, other than like 1 or 2, but like the RPS number I'm going to have is going to be really negative because Michigan didn't do anything that exploited what Army was trying to do. And the number one thing that was obvious on the film is they never threw a wide receiver screen. Like they had the one with Bell who's on a flare and that got 9 yards. So they could have done that all day.
I will say that I think that the screen game, because they definitely tried to work that in game one. That not seeing that in game two, that was a bit of a surprise. Not seeing more screen, because that seems like it's going to be a big part of what they do.
I mean, there's leaking your running back out of the backfield, and there's running a tunnel screen, and that's a different situation than just the stupidest play in football, which is a smoke route, which isn't even a route at all, where you just throw it to the wide receiver and tell him to go get yards because the cornerback's playing way off, and you cannot let teams play 10 yards off your receivers. You just can't do it. And Michigan had absolutely no thought to, like, this is a problem. So there you go.
You know, I have a question. and maybe you saw Spath's article. He's quoting some so-called, I assume, insider, saying that really we had this idea that this is Gattis's offense, that Harbaugh handed off the keys to Gattis, and I think most of us looking at it thought, okay, this is probably a good thing, but it's from this article that Mike wrote, sounds like that isn't true.
I don't know how much to put on an anonymous guy who is saying a
bunch.
Did
you read it?
Well, and Sam's also saying that he doesn't know. Who's making these?
There's also contradictory things.
I think Josh Gattis is driving his offense. Do I think that the head coach, like head coaches do, has influence this way? Absolutely. But when you get to the part of the game where they have the 11 straight runs.
12.
Or 12, however many.
Yeah.
All those consecutive runs, I think when you hear Josh Gattis talking about, look, I had there were two things in mind in that sequence. So he was talking about it in the press conference the other day. I am working clock and at the same time as I'm trying to advance the ball and win the game. And I don't think that that's Jim Harbaugh simply calling up just, hey, man, run it 12 straight times. I think he has in mind, and I'm trying to work the clock. And then the other piece of this that we have to, and this was the part that Al brought to my attention, I think is a very good point. Now, I haven't broken down how many of those run plays were RPOs in that 12 consecutive run. I don't know. But one of the things he said was that when you are an RPO offense, an offense that has RPO as a central part, the run pass balance that you typically might go into a game, you say, I want to be split, I want to be even, whatever you preconceive is kind of thrown out the window when you are RPO, because you don't determine your run pass split when you are an RPO team. The defense determines whether you're an RPO team. Well, so he said a lot of times you got to force to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to call a pass on this play.
So the problem is not necessarily with the fact that they were trying to run clock on the last drive. It's that they weren't doing some really easy things to do that.
Like?
Like throwing a freaking bubble screen. I hate that we're back here already. But, like, you can't let Army align like it did. There was a Michigan State game like 5 or 6 years ago before Don Brown was here. I think it was during the Brady Hoke era where Michigan was playing soft corners. And they ran bubble screen after bubble screen until Michigan had to stop doing that. And that was their whole first half in a game that they won going away. And just if it's 4th and 2 and you have this obvious successful play and you don't run it and you get downloaded by Army and you're just doomed, it's really frustrating to watch. Because that should be an auto check at the line of scrimmage. I don't know how it's 2019 and you don't have that. So... It was a pretty frustrating game to watch from that perspective.
The one 4th and 2. So the second 4th and 2, look, man, I think it was there with the play that they ran.
No,
the one where he cut back into not the bunch where they're blown up in the backfield.
So they're
the one after that. If he presses the line and goes to his right where his blocking is, I think there's a good chance he gets the first down, but he gets the ball and cuts it back immediately and cuts it back right into the teeth of the defense.
I mean, you've got a crashing defensive end who has nothing but Charbonnet on his mind. Like, it's possible that he gets there, but it's not a good situation to be in because that defensive end has nothing but Charbonnet. He has no quarterback responsibility, so he's just going to run down the line and tackle Charbonnet no matter where he goes.
See, I think this is the – let's make sure we're talking about the same one.
Is that the one where the two guys on the right whiffed on their tackles?
All right, we have to break. And the very first one, they had three guys in the backfield. I mean, that's one where there was clear confusion on who to block.
Right.
And everybody got it wrong, and he got blown up in the backfield. I'm talking about the second one.
Is that the one where McCaffrey was the quarterback?
McCaffrey was the quarterback, and you know, he gets the ball, and immediately – you know, cuts it upfield instead of pressing to his right where his blocking was. And I think there's a good chance he picks that first down up if he does that. my opinion, but.
Well, I'm not trading that for a sure first down if you just exploit the fact that they're literally playing 10 yards off Nico Collins.
Sure.
If you throw it to him immediately, there is no person in the world coming from 10 yards that's stopping that.
Well, what is Dylan McCaffrey in the game at that time going to make that decision?
If he can't, then he shouldn't be on the field. He shouldn't be on the team.
Not the team.
I mean, like, if you're a quarterback and you can't do that, then
it's not
you're
a hard
not a quarterback.
I think it being anyway, we got to get to a break. We'll come back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket. All right, so guys, let's go to the phones real quick and get a couple of questions. Don in Ann Arbor. Don, what's up?
Good morning, guys. I've read on AMCO blog and heard on the radio here quite a bit the last few days about how Army does a variety of unusual things on defense that confuse an offense, and certainly it did seem to us. But the implication seems to be that, this is sort of a one-off, and Michigan won't face this kind of defense the rest of the season. My question is, what is to prevent all of our other opponents from basically doing exactly what Army did with the same kind of hopeful results on their end?
Well, when you've practiced a defense and you have to do something that's slightly different, there are transition issues there that you could prevent the opponent from adopting a similar approach, but the real answer is not much.
Well, I mean, on the blitz that we're talking about, so Shea pulls it into at least the one I was talking about, the unique defensive look they came with a corner blitz out of. They ran that same blitz later in the game, and Michigan picked it up. So yeah. I mean, you saw from one half to the next was it a purposeful adjustment? Did they look at that blitz and say, hey, let's turn the protection in this direction? I can't say for sure that that's the case, but I can say, looking at that play at the end of the first half, I was like, wow, that didn't see that coming. I could see how you could not see that coming. You glance short side, you obviously corner poses a threat, but you look and see one high safety, so there's no freaking way. That corner's coming. He comes because, that safety over the top is given. They flow into a 2-deep post snap, and that they brought the nickel guy down, and he gave the safety over the top a chance to get to the deep half. It was some good stuff by the Army defense. But again, Michigan in the second half, same blitz came. They picked it up and got a positive play out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about this sort of micro view, but from a macro view where we're talking in the break, I mean, none of us think Rice is a particularly good team, and they average 5.5 yards a play. Is that right, Ed? That's
yep.
What you said in their game against Army, and I think we average somewhere in the range of 4.5 yards a play. And to me, that's I know these transitive views don't always make much sense, but still, you have to be a little worried when Rice plays somewhat better on offense than Michigan does against the same defense.
I think it's obvious. I mean, who doesn't think they have some some things to work on, some serious things to work on in the break? The question is, do you think that what you saw is fixable?
I don't know.
And I think a lot of what we saw is fixable.
I think a lot of it is. I don't know about if everything is. But just we've talked about all the reasons why Michigan wasn't able to move the ball. Just a couple numbers, like success rate on rush plays was 29%. That's terrible. They're actually pretty good on passing. It was about 46. The college football average overall plays is about 43%. So it was really on those run plays for all the reasons discussed today. That was their real problem.
Okay.
I mean, the issues that we saw are probably 50-50 in terms of, like, this is an issue that we're going to get better at. I mean, getting Tre Wilson back, getting Runyon back are going to be big wins for this offense. And the half of it kind of feels like this is just Shea Patterson, and he's going to bug out of pockets he shouldn't bug out of. He's not going to have a whole lot of, like, quick rhythm throws. Like, how many times did he, like, come to a stop and not have a hitch step before throwing? Not many. So that, like, feel where you just kind of drop back and you've got your guy open and you throw. Michigan had very, very little of that in this game, and they didn't have much of it last year. So I'm beginning to think that, you know, this is just what Patterson is, and that's not what we were hoping.
I mean, he's still a very accurate quarterback. And if you're going to give him a clean pocket for 3 seconds, I like the chances. That's the question.
Well, I mean,
teams are going to blitz him, teams are going to try to confuse him.
Or if you feel that way, I mean, I think Shea is actually, when it comes to throwing on a run, throwing on a move, I thought that was a strength of his last year.
Yeah, half-field reads are kind of just limited upside. I just think that Drew Wilson coming back is going to be big because you can put him in on passing downs, mm-hmm. and this kind of stuff that got him sped up is going to happen much less, if at all.
I agree.
And if, like, Drew Wilson's in on the second fumble that the cornerback comes on a strip sack, maybe he gets a block there. Maybe that's
Even if it's Runyon. Again, it's not Runyon's guy, but, you know, you see with a veteran guy think about, I don't know if you guys watch Minnesota Fresno State, but you had Antoine Winfield in overtime. You know, he's covering they might have been in cover two. Anyway, he would have the deep half on that. He comes from his half of the field all the way to the other side because he was able to look back and see what the quarterback was doing. He turns, goes to the other side of the field and picks off the football to compensate for the corner. I mean, man, the seam guy, the linebacker who I think it was the linebacker who needed to have depth there, got just buzzed by. Winfield comes over the top, intercepts the ball, which would have been a touchdown. My point being, this was a veteran guy that made an improvisation. You know, he improvised, and you see veteran guys do things like that. So even if Drew Wilson, if you got one of those guys, Drew or Runyon, maybe one of those pressures, be it the first Shea fumble, which was on him, you know, fumbling, or the second Shea fumble, which wasn't, maybe one of those pressures, if not both of them, are picked up if you have one or both of those guys in the game.
Yeah, it's a little interesting to me. Again, take this with somewhat of a grain of salt, but Pro Football Focus graded out the offensive line in this game very well. Onwenu was off the charts for them, over 90. Mayfield was well above average, 75. Bredesen was above average, 70. And Ruiz was average. Only Hayes got a below average grade from them. Yeah. So at least from their review of the offensive line, I'll be interested to see what Brian says. But
I mean, that just means it's kind of the scheme, right? I mean, if your interior guys, which are all conference guys, are blocking well.
I think there's something to be said for what will happen. And we got to get out of here because Inside the Huddle is up next. When your quarterback is once again as prominent a run threat as he was in the first game. All right, that'll do it for today's show. If you missed any part of it, you can pull it down on the podcast. Thanks for listening to the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTK The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.
Better than